Pat G. Take it away, Pat. All right. Okay. Howdy.
I'm Pat. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater from Norman, Oklahoma. And I wrote this out, some of it, which is an amazing thing for me. That's God doing for me something that I can't do for myself. But I am still myself. Okay, but I am still myself. And so you'll see that it's quite a mess, but God's got it. So I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope regarding how Overeaters Anonymous has helped me to develop, maintain, and depend upon a relationship with a power greater than myself. The three of us speakers, we talked some, but we didn't coordinate and divide up this topic. So you may hear some of the same things more than once. And my theory is if you hear the same reading or a same experience more than once, it was probably worth repeating. And I also know that it helps me to hear a message from various perspectives, over and over. Repetition is helpful. And so again, and you may hear this throughout my talk. I mean, God's got it. It's God. It's not me. And I'm aware, and even being able to do this, I'm aware that there's so much that I could say about how OA and the steps and the fellowship have helped me develop, maintain, and depend upon this relationship with power greater than myself. So I'll just hit highlights and realize that they won't even necessarily be the most important ones. It is what it is. I also need to confess that signing up to speak was, they ask you, and it's like, I know it's a really busy time, and I don't really know if I want to, but it's like I'd be asked again, and so I did it as an act of faith, which I thought, if you're talking about higher power, what better thing to do than go on faith? And I have given a lot of thought to it ever since then, and that's been several months ago. I've given a lot of thought to it, written some, hope to write it all out, and ultimately ran out of time, was down to last night and then this morning. And I wasn't late because of my chair necessarily, but I was about three blocks down the road and realized I forgot my clothes for the skit. And then it's like, okay, am I going to turn around and go get them, or am I going to come back and get them later? And I went and got them and just texted real quick and said, I'm going to be late, and but God's got it, And something I realized in that is, like, I have lots of thoughts of, gratitude and program and recovery and, good things in my brain. And when I try and put them on a page, a lot of times, sort them out, it just, there's like paralysis or whatever. And so to get things written out, and have somewhat of an outline or a plan, I mean, that is something that it I would say a year ago, I would not have been. I mean, yeah, I know I'm not going to look organized or anything, but I would have not been this organized. I would have been flying off the cuff, and that's a bad thing for me because I really get to rambling. So, anyway, a little bit about me and my concept of God. I've had a concept of a heavenly father figure God for all of my life. I was born into a family with a long history of religious practice and worship attendance. And as far as I know, I've never really doubted or, doubted God's existence or God's goodness. As best I can recall, I've been grateful for that foundation. And I was trying to think, so what was my concept of God? And like I said, I think it was loving. But as much as anything, I realized when I left home that church and prayer, those rituals were like a security kind of, and a reminder of my of my family. And just, it was like a comfort, a security blanket or something. But also, after I left home for college and into adult life, including marriage, challenges in daily life forced me to examine my relationship with God and realize, you know, I couldn't just, I don't know, blind faith wasn't really working. And one of my biggest challenges was my relationship with food. And I'd say I may or may not have realized then how the food problem was intertwined with the unmanageability of my life. The insane ways I tried to control both my food and my life. You know, because it really wasn't until program that I realized the insanity of doing the same things over and over and over and trying to get different results and anywhere near having the idea that I can't do this myself. Or maybe I even had an idea that I couldn't do it myself. But I guess the thing I don't understand is, yeah, kind of like how that greater power works. But anyway, this work gets kind of jumbled. So by the grace of God, of this good God, my search for help with the eating led me to OA in the spring of my senior year of college. That was 1981. And none of us in that knew what we were doing, but something about the AA literature and just joining together on that common, you know, that shared struggle and the hope that there's a solution. And basically, it was based on what was in the literature, planted a seed. Well, after I graduated, I was somewhere else. I didn't get involved with the program. I think I did other programs. Got married. It was a struggle. But then by about 1985, things were really going good in my marriage. And so there was no reason for me to be overeating. And I was getting ready for a Halloween party and made something. And I ate it all. And it's like, you know, something's not right with me and food. And, you know, there were other things too. But so I called and learned about a meeting in Norman, Oklahoma. And I went, and I was the smallest one in the room. But I knew that these women had something that I didn't have and that I needed. Kind of simultaneous with this, my religious exploration of my spirituality and beliefs and concept of God, as I understood God, shifted my faith from blind reliance on what my parents and forebears trusted in to a personal relationship and a sense of truly being known and loved by a gracious and righteous God, who is the creator and sustainer of everything and who could do anything and everything and who is working all things for good. I mean, that's real key to my concept of higher power. What do I say here? I typed it and then I started adding things. Okay, this exploration. Okay, yeah, these were happening simultaneously. And yet, as I was doing step work in the program, it became clear that it didn't seem like this powerful, all-knowing God who can do anything and everything and is working for good was helping me with my food program. You know, I was obsessed with food, whether I was overeating or whether I was restricting. I'll say that fear of being fat, and love of crunchy vegetables, and somehow popcorn figured into this, and exercise really kept me from gaining a lot of weight. As far as I know, my top weight was probably just maybe 30 pounds, maybe 40 over what I am right now. But I did yo-yo in that. I was obsessed. I was tormented. If I was eating, I was miserable. If I was not eating, I was miserable. And I didn't bring my books with me, but I know in one of the steps 1, 2, and 3, it, you know, it talks about how we just wanted to eat. And it says eat. What did it say? I don't know how it says it, but I say I wanted to eat and not get fat. You know, I don't think I even cared about the compulsion. I just didn't want to get fat. And let's see. So I identify with the part of our OA 12 and 12 that says, you know, some of us believed in God and thought God could do anything for us. But, you know, I thought, so he must have some reason for not helping me. And I guess through the years, well, I'll get to that in a minute. I just, for some reason, I put this down, and so I feel like I need to share it. Oh, okay. And I think that'll work. When I think of getting to that first meeting and these people who really embrace me to for my recovery, I hear the term fat serenity sometimes, and people say, I mean, just things about recovery. And it's like, I do not question for a minute that those women, some of them who never lost the weight, I don't know if they ever really quit compulsively overeating, but they had something that they wanted, that I wanted, and I kept coming back because of them as much as anything. And it told me that however I am, if I feel like I belong here, I am, I belong here. Okay, so I said if I got my warning, I would say, I'd go to my closing stuff. Okay, kind of summing up. First step two for me, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Real key to that in this program, and this is probably the most, the part I have most experience on, is it was through working the steps, that either the second or third time through them, that I realized I needed to expand my concept of God when it comes to recovery from compulsive overeating, and then another thing that I'm totally powerless over, to include the OA program, the steps, and the fellowship. That God, as I understand God, can do anything and everything. And when it comes to my recovery, he chooses to do it through the 12 steps. For this means for this for me, this means I can't do it alone. I need to reach out to others who share my affliction and my desire for recovery, for help and to help. And is often, as is often the case, coming to believe something doesn't always mean I'll act on it. Resistance dogs most of my steps. And that is so true. Try as I might, and too often still do to prove otherwise, the power I need for recovery doesn't just flow directly from God to me and back and forth. It requires my interaction with others who can't solve the eating and living problem without a greater power. So in step three, decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. For me, that comes down to trust. And how do I know if I trust? I act. I pray, I listen, I act in faith. Try to trust God with results, even when the results seem like painful consequences. I truly believe my higher power won't allow me to face more than I can endure if I keep my focus on and faith in Him. And I just threw in there, give God thanks. I mean, that's part of my, I'd stop every step. On step seven, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. I haven't been as consistent and thorough in steps four through six. I'm often not aware of specific shortcomings. I mean, I've done those steps, but kind of an organized 10 step, even, I'm not real good at that. I humbly ask in generalities. This is an area that I definitely need, is in need of work. And in step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And I start every day with prayer before I even open my eyes. If I wake up during the night, and my mind is on something else, as soon as I can, I try and just shift it to praise and prayer and gratitude, and focus on my higher power. Thank you. Prayers that help me focus on higher power include the Serenity Prayer, the steps and the step prayers, and the On Awakening pages of the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book. And then I also have key passages and prayers from my religious tradition. I'm continually learning and being reminded that pausing to pray, focusing on God in faith and with gratitude, is the right thing in every situation. When I do that, it usually leads me to another right action, often including reaching out to another person in recovery for help or to help. And And I'm going to say this part. So in writing this and reflecting on my 40 years in program, I've realized we're not supposed to compare, but I do compare myself, and that I may have relief instead of recovery. It's still more than I could have ever imagined, and I'm grateful to the God of my understanding and God's work through the 12 steps and Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous. Thank you.
My name is Penny. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, everyone. Grateful to be here. And I'm supposed to talk to you tonight or today about some specific steps in my experience, strength, and hope in those steps. And I think that's step 2, 3, 7, and 11. A friend of mine told me I needed to tell you a story. I have a multiple hatter here, and I was first exposed to the 12 steps in the 1980s through an intervention, and I ended up in a treatment program. And the way that happened is I got sent to a third, and I had grown up in different multiple religions and been exposed to multiple religious doctrines. And as a result of that, I started praying because I didn't know what I was supposed to do. They said, you either go to this therapy and go to inpatient, or you get thrown out of this situation. So I drove around for about 2 hours and I was praying, God, show me your will. What am I supposed to do? It seems pretty obvious to me, right? Right now it does, but it didn't back then. In the clutches of an illness, I got to my home, I got out of my car, and I looked up in the sky, and there was a plane right over the house where I was living, and it was skywriting. And what it had written over my house was, is Emily here? Excuse me, Emily's not here. Emily's wearing some shoes called Nikes. Anyway, this plane was writing, just do it, right over my house. So, you know, if it's odd, it's God. And my God has a sense of humor. And I love that about my God because it keeps it real for me. The big book says we need to be quick to see where religious people are right, that we need to make use of what they offer. And I try to do that. I try to keep an open mind. I've had the privilege of being exposed to and learning multiple other cultural, spiritual belief systems, which helped me a lot. Because my higher power changes. And I'm grateful for that. Today, I don't practice the religion of my earlier life, which was very structured, and it was a doctrines of belief that were interpreted by humans. Today, my prayer is that HP will reveal HPs to me as HP is. That's what I want to know. I want to know the real HP as you are. But I also need to remember what other people say and what they believe. So sometimes my relationship with HP is on my knees, because one of the principles in step 7 in this experience with God is humility. And I'm not really very good at that because I have an ego. Back when I went exposed to that treatment center, we had this session where we were trying to learn to get in touch with God, and we were doing a meditation. And in my meditation, I saw going up to this higher power. And you know, in the Wizard of Oz, the Tin Man wears this inverted funnel. Well, in order to get to HP, everybody had to go through this inverted funnel. And when I got to the narrow part of the funnel to get in touch with my HP, my head got stuck. Because I have a big ego. And before I came up here, I'm going in my head, I want to be the best speaker up there. It's not what it's about today. Today, it's about this disease. I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. And that's pretty tricky, you know, because I forget. I have a daily reprieve. How's that go? Daily reprieve from this disease. What does that mean? The rest of that sentence says it's based on what I do to maintain my spiritual relationship with that power that I found.
It's a gift.
The present from my HP is this moment, just today, right now. That's the gift I have. And I have to live my recovery like that, one day, one moment at a time, because that's all I have. It doesn't matter what happened back then in those treatment sessions or in those other hat rooms. What matters is today. And because of my ego, when I came into this program, I had to take the 12-step books that I was using from other fellowships and put them on the shelf and buy brand new books because I had scribbled all over them. And I thought, well, I'll just tell you everything I learned from that other program. And you know what? There is so much more to learn about living life one day at a time and not having to pick up flour, sugar, or that first bite. A year ago, I had had a fall. I was in the clutches of this disease. And that fall resulted in an injury, and I could not walk because of my obesity. It's not about the numbers, but my highest weight was 230 pounds. And today it's a little bit different. I went to the doctor, and they diagnosed me with stage 4 osteoarthritis. I was pre-diabetic. I have high blood pressure, and they wanted to replace both of my knees, and I couldn't walk, and I had to get a handicap sticker. Well, maybe you might have seen me walking around this place. It's really different than it was a year ago. I was planning my own demise. I was in a state of depression. I walked into my first meeting of Overeaters Anonymous on the last day of March. And so my abstinent day is April 1st. I chose that for a reason. Because when I've gone through two other 12-step programs, and each of those programs I walked out of, I got to a goal weight. I lost 100 pounds in both of them. I had a beautiful life. God gave me that. I did not do it by myself. But I walked out of those programs. And this book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells my story. There's a guy who went and got a glass of milk at the restaurant, and he thought he could just put a shot of whiskey in it. But the moral of that story that he says is why he left is because he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. And that's what I did. I walked away from the precious gift of abstinence and recovery because I had neglected my relationship with a power greater than myself. Wow. This is a fatal disease. Today, I used to be on two blood pressure medicines. Today, I have let go of one of those, and I only take half a dose of the other one that I'm on. And I'm thinking we're going to be taking it away pretty soon. So, you know, I got to tell you what happened this morning. I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I have an action plan. Those were the things I learned about in that first meeting I went into. And in that first meeting, it was a very small meeting. It was in Mustang. And they read that diversity policy. And I heard the love of a power greater than myself in that room. And I felt acceptance, and I felt love, and I felt hope. I felt the presence of God. Because sometimes I don't feel that because I feel judged, because I judge people. You know, I'm critical, and I'm pointing the finger and said, it's your fault. See who I'm pointing at? It's your fault. That's my spouse, Lily. We've been together for quite a few years, and it's really hard to be a lesbian in Oklahoma. And it's scary in my little town because it just is. But I felt the love of God in that meeting. And that's why I kept coming back, because you accepted me and loved me unconditionally. And now I am learning to do that and give that back. I have to give that back. So we talked about the F10 through the OAOKC.org website. I completed the F10, and then I went on with the 15 weeks and journeying through all the steps. In OA, and I learned about my character defects. And some of my character defects that were revealed to me, besides my ego, I think there's a there's a step in there where we talks about we find these character defects and then we make amends and we, you know, eventually do all this. Well, my ego says, I want to change those words. I want to take that eventually did this out of the 12 steps and put, yeah. We eventually did it. We didn't do it immediately. We eventually took care of all those problems. So I procrastinate. That's one of my character defects. And I am an angry girl. And my sponsor teaches me, and then I think this is part of step 11, it talks about replacing, you know, the St. Francis prayer where I replace different character defects with assets. And we should seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Now it goes back to that milk story. Thank you. So that prayer tells me I can replace the hatred with love. I'm learning how to do that today. And it's a beautiful gift. I don't have to judge you. Because when I'm pointing my finger at somebody and I'm saying you are the problem, what I've learned is there's three fingers actually pointing back at me and one pointing to my higher power. So where's the problem here? I got three fingers pointing at me. Anytime there's a conflict in my life, I am part of it in one way or another. It's my job to figure out what part is mine and to get that straightened out. This morning, I got up. One of my character defects is anger, procrastination and anger. And I've had the privilege of changing my wardrobe a couple times in the last 6 months. And I save some clothing that has sentimental value to me. So I have a section of my closet that's about this big. And I have this shirt. I'm going to take my clothes off right now. I have this shirt that had sentimental value. I think it was from a play I went to several years ago. And I'll show it to you. If you can't see what it says, I'm a nice girl until you piss me off. There's where the anger comes in. And I felt my higher power urge me to let go of this shirt several months ago, but I didn't do it. So I brought it with me because I'm supposed to wear a black shirt tonight for the skit. It's black. It's a nice shirt. And I looked at it and I put it on and I felt this thorn in the side of my flesh. Something was poking me and I thought, okay, God, if it's odd, it's God, what's this about? And I reached down into my shirt, kind of like this. And I pulled out this thorn. It was a big sticker. Now, Jane could tell me what that sticker was because they're all over my property and I need to get rid of them. Greenbrier, thank you. I've sprayed my property. It's still there. Anyway, that was sticking to this pissed me off shirt. And if it's odd, it's got to be God. So to me, that was a message. It's time to let go of this shirt, but I don't want to pass it on to anybody because for me, this is some negative stuff. You know, I don't want to be pissed off at anymore. I want to be kind. I want to be loving. I want to carry the message. I want to do it one day at a time with the help of a higher power. So I am making a commitment to you today that I'm going to take this pissed off shirt home and I'm going to probably put it in my burn barrel and burn it because I don't want to be pissed off Penny anymore in my own little bubble, in my own little world, because I couldn't do it by myself. I needed God to do it. And I found that God or my understanding in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, in the words that you have spoken, in the lessons of life that you've shared with me, in the examples that you've set for me, in the kindness that you have showed me, and in the beautiful way you are teaching me how to eat for nutrition and not for emotional fixing. I have a disease of my body, my mind, and my spirit. And I've got to have recovery information come in my mind, go into my heart, and fill my spirit, and then I can share it. I want to be an attraction. I don't want to have to promote it. And so today, I'm learning that I don't have to save the world. I can humbly get on my knees and ask HP to help me be that person that shows people that you can stop eating compulsively one day at a time. And it's not just about the food. I have a great food plan. I couldn't do it by myself. I needed HP, and HP speaks through you. I want to say thank you very much. I'm grateful to be here, and I'm glad you all are here too.
I don't know how to follow either one of those. She was amazing, and she took her clothes off. So just sitting there going, I don't know how she did it. It'll be great. She'll be okay. You're amazing. Okay. I am a grateful recovering woman. I have a lot to tell you. Okay. I started young. My mom had struggled. She showed me the way, and I became a compulsive overeater. At 120 pounds, 16 years old, 5'6", my mom looked at me and said, if you keep going the way you're going, you're going to be a whale someday. Everybody has a little story like that, I'm sure, though. So I'm going to kind of move into some other things. I had an episode that happened with my uncle when I was 5. And when my mom found out about it, she said, oh, well, that makes sense. His age makes sense. He was just experimenting. So I wasn't ever like really important. Where I was 300 pounds. I was married. I had 3 kids, 3 stepkids, lived in the middle of nowhere in a travel trailer, not a travel trailer. That's not true. Thank you. A mobile home. And that was where I did not want to be. Like, my whole goal in life was not to live in a mobile home in the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma. And that's where I ended up. I told my husband, I have to go to this retreat. My best friend called me. She said, I've been doing this retreat for 5 years, and I need you to come. And it's a 12-step retreat for every woman. Every woman. Every 12 step. I'm really nervous. You guys are going to have to just hold on. Okay. So it was a all 12 step, all only women retreat. And I watched these women walk around, had no clue. She didn't tell me anything. I didn't know what I was getting into. So much crying, meditating, like all kinds of visualization. My mom came to me while I was walking down a path, and I was lost my mind. Anyway, so then we had to write things down, and we had to burn them, and all things were great. And I left there, and I said, this is day one. I'm going to get what you guys have. I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm going to go to a meeting. And I was geared towards, I'm going to do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I was a 19, and that there was not that where I lived in my little bitty town in Oklahoma. So I went to an Al-Anon meeting because I thought that was as close as, I mean, that's probably what's wrong with me. I just love people too much. And so I went in, and they started talking, and I was like, they're talking about their alcoholic, the way that I act. And I thought, that's not a good thing. And so I decided I wasn't going to go to the AA meeting because I had accidentally opened the door to try and find the Al-Anon meeting, why they were doing their prayer at the end. And some lady said, where are you going? What are you looking for? And I said, and she goes, Al-Anon's upstairs. And I was like, oh, okay. So the only other meeting that was available to me was an NA meeting. And I am not a narcotics addict. But my mom told me, if you're ever uncomfortable, just to dress nicely and to, it'll make you feel better. So I put on a little polka dot skirt, and I got my Vera Bradley bag, and I went to an NA meeting for the first time in my life, and they scared me a lot. But they bang on stuff when they say things, and I didn't know that was going to happen. And when I walked down the steps, a guy followed me, and he whispered, keep coming back. And I was like, okay. And now I know that's cool, because it was. Every time I went, he came right by. I left as soon as the prayer was over. I didn't want anybody to talk to me. I ran down those stairs, basically, and he was right behind me. Keep coming back. Didn't matter where I wore. Didn't matter. They accepted me. And I was trying to read through the steps and read the AA book, and I was alone. I had decided what religion I was going to be, and I went through a lot of trouble to do that. And it's not a common religion in Oklahoma. And so there was some push and pull there, and my kids were bullied about it. But I knew where I was going, and I knew what I believed in, and I knew I already had a higher power coming into this, so it was going to be fine. And then my friend called me and said, "Hey, have you heard about Overeaters Anonymous?" And I was 300 pounds. And I said, "Oh no, I don't know what that is, but it sounds like something I might need." And so I looked it up, and there was an event that weekend, and I called. It was Wednesday. I called and I said, "Hello." And this little lady said, "Hi, this is Pam." And I was like, "Hi, Pam. I want to come to the thing tonight because I think this weekend, because I think that's where I need to be." And she said, "Absolutely, just come." And I said, "You sure you have room for me?" She said, "We'll make room." And I said, "I only get paid once a month and I don't have the money." And she said, "Come." And I was like, "Okay." So higher powers right there. That was 6 years ago and 120 pounds. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's 6 years ago this next weekend, like next weekend. I met my sponsor there. I met another person who asked me if I had a sponsor. Two people asked me that weekend if I had a sponsor, and I looked at them and smiled and said, "No, I do not." And they said, "Okay." And I called the list of people that was on the board, and I said, "Nobody wants to be my sponsor." And the woman I was talking to said, "Well, honey, how many people have you asked?" And I said, "Oh, okay. Yes, that, will you be my sponsor?" And she said, "Yes." And she still is my sponsor. So I lucked out on that one. She's pretty amazing. She said, "I'm not asking you to change everything, just your whole life. So just call me every day." And I said, "Okay, that I'll do that." So I did the program. I had a sponsor. I had sponsees. I had programs. I was asked to speak, and I did that. And my life was grand. And then I realized that I still was really unhappy. And so I did the double dipping, where I went to another program and found out that I really do love people too much. And I stood at the lake one day and I said, "God, why would you bring me to this man if you're going to just have this whole thing fall apart now?" And what came back to me was, were you really listening to me back then whenever you made this decision? And I went, "No, that's true. No, I wasn't." So my husband and I went to him and I said, I really think we need to be able to communicate better. I took on and I changed and I said, "We don't know how to communicate." And he said, I don't want to do that. So I had a really great relationship with my children at that point. When I got into program, I wasn't talking to my mom, my parents at all. And we had mended fences there, and I did all my steps and all my step work and accepted them for who they were. And I did the same thing with my husband, worked through all that. And I thought, I've got program, like I'm covered, right? I'm doing all the things. I got this little umbrella that is program and is going to protect me when everything comes. I'm this little girl in a raincoat with this tiny little umbrella with this huge tsunami coming towards me, but it always seems to work. He always seems to protect me. It always works out. And they say, you know, just believe it'll work out. He can see around corners you can't see. He knows things you don't know. When I first started program, we had something called a Fun Friday, where everybody bought the snacks that they saw on Pinterest and made. And it was all on this big table. I walked in and I looked at it and I turned around and I went to my room and I kicked my shoes off and I stood on the tile and I said, "Listen, you brought me here. Now you need to fix this because I can't do this by myself." And I didn't eat anything that day. And I was like, "Okay, well, thanks. I'll try not to yell at you anymore. And then I said, I think I can do everything, but I can't do a buffet. And of course everybody was like, buffet. And so I went to a Chinese buffet and I sat in yeah, and I sat in the car and I yelled at God again. And I said, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to eat my faith, and my sponsor says I have to, and all that food is going to be yours, and you better take every bite of it because I can't do this myself. And you knew that when you brought me here. And then some old couple walked by my car, and I was like, sorry, I'm really not crazy. I walked in, and I was everything's going to be okay. And it was. But then when the divorce happened, he had said he didn't want to do it anymore. He said, I don't want to do this. And I was like, oh, well, I am handling things in a way that I never knew, handling things I never knew I could before. And I'm going to stand up for myself. I'm going to say the next 20 years of my life, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to feel like this. I don't want to live like this. And I want you to be happy too. And so I'm going to walk away. I left my dog. That sucked. Anyway, I started counseling. That's it. Left. Jeez, I told you give me 5 minutes. Okay. My children painted me as the villain in it. My ex had behind my back without me knowing for 30 years. It had been divorced previously. And he said, if I ever get divorced again, I'm making sure the kids go with me. And so as the divorce unfolded, I found out the things that he did to cause problems with me and my children, and they didn't want to have anything to do with me. And I said, I love my job. Don't transfer me. And they transferred me. And I said, okay, well, my boss and I were having some problems, and I stood up for myself because that's what God taught me, is that I'm loved and I'm okay with who I am. And ADHD, whatever. I am who I am. I am who I am. And having that complete acceptance of a higher power helped me move forward. So I walked into my boss's office, and because she called me in, and she said, before I walked in, I said, whatever's happening here, I'm going to let it be in your hands. And I was moved to a situation. And in November of last year, one of my students wrapped their legs around my waist and their arms around my neck, and couldn't go back. So I lost my job. My children weren't talking to me. I couldn't keep my head straight. And I was mad at God again, only this time it was because I did everything I was supposed to do and I still got hurt. So I didn't believe he was ever going to get me in a position where I would do that again. So I'm going to take it all on myself. And I stopped praying, but I kept saying, I know there's a reason. I know there's a reason. I know there's a reason. Because for 5 years, I said, I know there's a reason. I know there's a reason. I know there's a reason. And I lost my apartment because I left my oven and my stove on and I went to go get milk. And I came back and there was a big thing. It was a big deal. Anyway, I kept the mantra with me. I'm going to offer myself to you. I'm going to have you build with me. And I kept telling everyone, I'm okay. And I gave my brother my guns on Christmas because I didn't want him in the house. And I just didn't figure that there was anything left to take away. In 5 years, I lost my food. I lost chocolate. I mean, I lost chocolate. I lost my dog. I lost my trailer home. I'm the Oklahoma song. And I lost my apartment. My Jeep fell apart. The rearview wind mirror just fell off while I was driving down the road. It was a time of my life. And I just kept saying, I know there's something else and that needs, this isn't going to be wasted. and I'm going to share this, and it's going to go good to the good of someone else. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And I kept saying, something needs to change. Something needs to change. Something needs to change. And the fear is still with me, obviously. I do this when I walk into any I do this when I walk into any building, and that looks like a school. That's what I wanted to do for so long, and now I can't have a child come to me because I'm so afraid of them when they get near me. Like, I can't do it. That being said, my temple even shut down. I mean, my church shut down. Like, I mean, everything that could go wrong happened. Then I found another church and I started going. And in the middle of all that, somebody asked me to be an intergroup chair. And I was like, you guys, this is not a good time. And they said, well, you have abstinence. And I was like, I don't know how long that's going to last either. Maybe we shouldn't hope for that, you know? And then someone asked me to speak, and I said, I can't be people. I can't do people. I stand against the wall as close as I can. I can't make eye contact when there's a bunch of people around. What good am I going to be? But my higher power is a jerk sometimes. Hers is funny. That's cool. I'm glad. I ended up moving next door to my mom. Can I just tell you? Okay, I have a nice car now. That's cool. I started dating again. That was horrific. Okay. And I found a great counselor, and my ex and I still talk. Just called me the other day. I was, we were at dinner. He sent me a text message. Hey, you want my cruise cabin? Anyway, my relationship with my daughters is insane right now. I have dinner with my daughter every week. I have my other daughter who we hardly ever talk to. We see each other at least twice a month, and she calls me mama. My feelings are hurt. This is what's happening. I was like, okay, let's 12-step it. And she's like, I'm not doing that. Okay, well, then tell me how you're powerless over that. And I can do that with her. My parents and I are okay, even though I'm very close to them right now. And as of Monday, this is going to make me cry. As of Monday, they had a board meeting at the school, and they approved an amendment for a whole section of my district's contract to add teacher rights, policies, and procedures for whenever there's a violent attack on a teacher, which they didn't have before. And that happened Monday night. I thought, yeah, okay. So now I have something to say about how amazing you are, even though all I wanted to do was complain. So what I want to tell you is, your definition of your higher power may be different now, and it may be different in 2 days from now, and it will keep changing. It will keep changing, but that doesn't mean it's not there. And through all of this and all of that, I still haven't had chocolate, and I never broke my food plan, and I haven't changed much except for some food behaviors I had to add. But anyway, I stay abstinent, and I'm still a chair. I don't know why they think that's a thing, but you know, I got another hand. I just want to say thank you so much for listening to my story, and don't give up on your HP, because they know more than you do. Okay.
Oh, well, I think we have to have another hand, don't you?
Oh.
Oh, boy. I am so grateful. So grateful to just be here and hear these amazing stories. Okay, I'm still Vani, grateful recovering compulsive overeater. And we need to have, how much time do we have before we're done?
She gave it to me.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, you will talk? Okay. So the person who just last spoke received, because she had been crying, she received the black shirt that says she's angry on it, that probably will go in the burn file, was handed to the last person to blow her nose on. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Okay. So now how much do we have time for questions? No. Oh, that 19 minutes. That's fabulous. Okay. So who has the microphone? Oh, okay. I just have to remember we have to close. Okay. All right. Sure. Just give us maybe 3 minutes at the end. All right. Okay. So.
It's more of a comment than a question, but I'm a teacher, and I'm really grateful to hear that I'm not alone with the escalating violence that I see in schools. And I guess when you're not alone, it just feels a part of you. So I just wanted to thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to also say I have been in education and I'm a hugger. And I remember when I started, I mean, and when you work with toddlers, they don't do anything but hug. I mean, that's what you have to do. And so I was crying with you, lady. Okay, who else has a question or a comment? All right.
Hi, I'm Jenny, and I'm from the Wichita Mid-Continent Intergroup. I was just curious if any of you ladies would like to share what you do on a regular basis for your spiritual life, like how you use that in your action plan.
You know, basically in my share, I mean, I mean, through program, I've gotten to where, as the person was sharing last night, and just, I mean, if my first thought when I wake up is not focus on my higher power, prayer, gratitude. I mean, it's just like through years and years in the program, it's like that is one thing that I do. I may still struggle with my food. I may still struggle with character defects, but I pray, and I pray for faith. You know, I pray. I pray to keep my focus on and my faith in my higher power, and to trust my higher power and not my own thinking and understanding, which is what got me here and what doesn't work. And, you know, when I have that resistance, I pray for willingness. And like I said, I pray and I write. I pause. Last night, you know, a person talked a lot about pausing, and, you know, my higher power is in those moments. And like I said, my struggle is that, I mean, God has definitely shown me that when it comes to recovery from compulsive overeating, I can't do it alone or just me and God. I got to work with other people. And I still struggle on that. But so that's, you know, it's just like keep coming back and absorb what the people, you know, teach me. That's what works.
Thank you.
I want to give a plug for the appendices. Now, appendices, I don't know how to say that. You teachers can help me out here. Those little star things that, what's it called?
That's fine.
Okay, thank you. Okay. the appendices in both the big book and the other OA books because I've learned so much from those. And this is from Appendix 2 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This was very helpful for me very early in my recovery and continues this day to be. Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery. These are indispensable. And then there's a quote by Herbert Spencer, and it says, there's a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which shall not fail to keep a person, I'm paraphrasing, in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. For me, on a regular basis, my sponsor has suggested that I pray a couple of the different step prayers on a regular basis, third step prayer, seventh step prayer. I do try to do that on a regular basis. But what I also try to do is there are so many prayers in our literature. Page 86 of the Big Book is something that I've been using a lot lately. I read it. I also use an app called OA Toolkit. Did I say that right? It's got some different prayers in it too on awakening. There's so many prayers in that little simple reading. You know, and with my anger, it says that I can do some prayers if I get agitated or doubtful. And it says I can just pause if that happens. And I can ask HP's protection and care with complete abandon. And I've done that a couple times, and you know, it works. It works. I couldn't find my keys. I lost my keys one day. And I was searching all over the property. I hiked out to the shop in the outbuilding. I looked everywhere. I figured I left it somewhere in the city. And I forget all about this prayer. And then I was walking back to the house, and I stopped in the middle of the yard, and I remembered that prayer. And I said that prayer. And as soon as I took the step to walk back to the house, my spouse yells my name, Penny, I found your keys. As if it's odd, it's God. But, you know, being aware of the readings in the Big Book, and when they say, you know, you ask God, ask it. There's so many prayers. So keeping an open mind to that and remembering to apply those when I need them. And I need them every day. I need them a lot. Thank you.
I have the Serenity Prayer and the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer written on a file card next to my bed. And even when I was mad, I couldn't get away because it's right there. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was right there. Meditation has a lot to do with the spirituality part of it. I was told early on in the program that prayer is you talking and meditation is you listening so that you can find the answers. Did that answer your question? Okay.
Ten, did you say? Five, okay. Anybody else? Come on, call me.
I want it on the record. Stacy has done a fabulous job as chair of our intergroup. And she is so positive and encouraging. And I just am deeply, deeply grateful.
Anybody else?
Hello, I'm Peggy, compulsive overeater. And I have a Charlie horse, goodness. That's not good. Okay, so at the end of the 12 steps, in some of our meetings, we often read about weakness versus strength that binds us together. How do you apply the concept of being weak when it comes to your higher power and your daily action plan? Thank you.
Great question. If that I hope that was heard. How do you apply the concept of weakness versus strengths applying to your daily action plan?
Mm-hmm.
bum, 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 bum.
You, I mean, I'd say some of them. I'll say two things. First of all, I haven't been to a convention in a while. And when did it go from people sharing their own experience, strength, and hope on the topic to a panel discussion? I missed that somewhere. I was not expecting this. I'll just be real honest to tell you. But that said, I mean, to me, everything about the program is I am weak and I can't do it on my own. And when I reach out to others for help and to help, it's like that's where the power comes from. And as I've gotten to see throughout this year, throughout this day even, it sounds like a trite little saying, God's got it. Whether I think he does or not, God's got it. And my weakness, it's all I have in some ways. I mean, I can't even really explain it, but it's like my strength would get in my way. When I start to have strength, that's when I run into trouble. When I am just in my weakness and trusting God, it works. God's got it. And that, I don't know, that may not even make sense to anybody, but that's how it works for me.
One of the things that I keep saying to myself is I will never rise above being a human. I will always, always be weak. I will always, always be weak in some area because I will never be perfect. I can't.
I'm a spiritual being on a human journey. And when I think of strength and weakness, I think of my body as I mature and go into the final chapters of my life. And it's very different at this time than it was 10 years ago. My body's not as strong. If I'm a spiritual being on a human journey and I want to become a stronger spiritual being on a human journey, I need to practice. And there's a lot of principles and a lot of things, a lot of tools that I can do on a daily basis to practice being a better spiritual being. Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Let's have another hand. Oh, this is beyond my expectations. Yeah. Okay. How much time do we have, Jennifer? Okay. All right. So, all right. Let's get in a circle. Hold down time in a circle to be grateful. Okay. And we're going to end with the OA promise.